Kill them all! This has been It Could Happen Here, a show where I just kill them all. Harrison? Chris? You wanna take over?
Oh boy.
I just woke up. Haven't had coffee yet.
That is just incredibly spooky.
Urging murder. Well, it is spooky. You're right. This is
true.
I didn't realize that until just now, but retroactively, that makes it fine.
See? Extremely spooky.
Yeah. What are we doing? Who are
we? We're doing where it could happen here. We're doing this is a podcast where we talk about spooky stuff that happens around Halloween. And today we are doing the spookiest thing of all, which will be revealed shortly.
Oh boy, I hope it's Will Wheaton.
It's not Will Wheaton.
Well,
unfortunately,
that's the spookiest
thing. I really should have looked for that tie-in, because there might be one.
Is a CIA asset.
We might get there. I don't know.
Okay.
See, this is I'm hacking a fraud, and I didn't actually look into this.
The Will Wheaton connection?
Yeah, nope.
Well,
we missed it.
You and most journalists.
Yeah.
All right. What are we doing?
On June 14th, 1947, a rancher named W.W. Mac Brazel and his son Vernon were driving across their property when they encountered, quote, a large area of bright wreckage made up of rubber strips, tin foil, and rather tough paper and sticks.
Yeah, me too. It's just a regular night in Oregon, but yeah.
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 Continue.
Well, Brazel's back in a time where people are baffled when weird things happened instead of going, oh, it's Tuesday.
Yeah.
So,
oh man, what a time.
Yeah, so they didn't just go straight to Twitter.
No. He did something that was actually, you know, a reasonably responsible thing to do in 1947, which is that he spends about a week like picking up all of the scraps that he can and like putting them in a box, and then he drives it to the sheriff.
Okay,
and
sure.
The sheriff's name is George Wilcox.
I love that says a lot about the difference in urgency back then, where it's like, oh, this is important. I'll spend a week getting everything together before I take it off to the sheriff. Like, before the internet, you could really afford to sit on some shit.
Yeah, you could take your time.
It was an era in which, like, if you had a busy life, three things happened. Okay.
Yeah, so George Wilcox, the sheriff, looks at this and is like, I have no idea what any of this crap is. Like, what is happening? So he takes it to Roswell Air Force Base for further investigation.
Ah.
Now, Colonel Butch Blanchard, the commander of Roswell Airfield's 509th Composite Group, you know, sends a team out to analyze the wreckage, which includes an Air Force intelligence officer named Major Jesse Marshall. Now, Marshall gives a now infamous series of quotes to the media that results in the Roswell Daily Record running the sentence, quote, the intelligence office of the 509th Bombardment Group at Roswell Airfield announced at noon that the field has come into possession of a flying saucer. Now, this is the birth. Yeah, well, I mean, this isn't the birth of modern UFOlogy, but this is, you know, this is one of their most important events.
Yeah,
and,
like, of course.
The pictures do rule. All of the Roswell pictures are super rad because it's just random shit in a field, and they're like, it's aliens.
Yep.
There's random shit in the field.
Now, this is all happening amid just like scattered sort of reports of UFOs that have been cropping up throughout sort of like the post-war era.
Yeah.
And the next day, the Air Force releases a statement saying there's no flying saucer and the wreckage is just an air balloon. It's just, you know, it's just a weather balloon.
Sure.
It's fine. Yeah. So the Air Force
is lying. Air Force. Yes. Weather balloon.
Yeah, they're lying. Everyone knows they're lying, but this is where things get bad, because what Mark Brazel really discovered was something even spookier and more sinister than aliens. What Mark Brazel had discovered was the American Military Industrial Complex.
That
the
is
wreck,
incredibly spooky.
It turned out
that's what's really spooky.
Oh, it's real spooky. It's by the end of this episode, they will have. I had to cut two times. They almost killed everyone on Earth.
Oh,
my. Okay. Well, all right. So we're going to be judging folks for almost killing everyone on Earth. Like, you haven't almost killed everyone on Earth. Come on.
That's true. Podcasting saved me from a extinction of the entire human race.
And will eventually end all life on this planet.
I
believe in podcasting's potential to kill absolutely everyone.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a time. Yeah, actually, you know, this part of this is actually going to be about how we get to the point where everyone is podcasting on the internet about things.
This does absolutely play in to the Roswell incident.
Yeah, because there's a strong line between shit like Coast to Coast FM and the old like conspiracy, you know, the precursors to that alien UFO whatever radio shows and shit on the wideband back in the day, and podcasts where we are right now.
Yep, it's great. It's a good time. We're descended from great media. We're going to continue to produce great media. We're totally not just like an extremely a much larger version of the radio broadcast you get right before a genocide. That's not what's happening here. It's all, in fact, good and cool.
Yep. I mean, this is why I tell people to get machetes.
It's true.
Oof, that was a bad.
Yeah, that's a
made that comment.
Look, we just got to make sure.
Let's continue.
Only way is to blaze on.
Let's move right ahead.
Now, the Air Force is lying out of its ass, but the Air Force isn't lying out of its ass because they have a flying saucer. The Air Force knows precisely what they've gotten their hands on here, because the unidentified flying object that has crashed at Roswell is actually something called Project Mogul. Now, to understand Project Mogul, we need to go back a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, in 1945, the U.S. drops two nuclear bombs on Japan. And this does a lot of things, literally all of which are bad.
Yeah.
And one of which is that it sets off a sort of, it sets off, you know, the thing that we all live in now, which is the nuclear arms race between the U.S. and the USSR, who, you know, by pretty quickly after World War II are just bitter enemies. And, you know, by 1947... there's just wars raging across the world between communist and anti-communist forces. This is a war in China. I mean, in Greece, which I think people know more about the Chinese Civil War. People know less about Greece, where just like the British are like, oh, the communists are going to take power. So they just like give all the guns back to the fascists and they start doing the Holocaust again. And that, you know, sets off another civil war there. And you know, as Europe becomes, you know, divided between the two great powers, the U.S. becomes increasingly worried about the USSR acquiring their own nuclear weapons. So, to detect a potential Soviet nuclear test, the U.S. embarked on Project Mogul. Project Mogul sent 657-foot balloons. These are, like, massive balloons. They're twice the size of the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, those balloons are bigger than a balloon needs to be.
Yeah, they're too large. It's too big for balloons. And they load these balloons with like sensor and listening equipment to like detect a nuclear detonation. They float them into the upper jet stream, and the jet stream will like push them to Russia, is sort of the plan behind it. And this sort of works, except the Russians don't have nukes yet. So
yeah, this, by the way, is also why the song 99 Red Balloons was not just a banger, but also very realistic, because we absolutely could have had a nuclear exchange over some fucking balloons.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm not sure there's any direct balloon related near nuclear exchanges in this episode, but
no, but
don't worry.
It could have happened.
Yeah. What it did actually do was, you know, set off the modern UFO thing, because, one of these balloons like fails and it spews the wreckage around. And, you know, you see a bunch of the problems that are going to happen with sort of the rest of how the course of UFOs go, because, you know, you have initially the government's like, we have a flying saucer, and then they turn around and do this like incredibly half-assed cover-up that like everyone knows is fake. And, you know, so, you know, because Americans are Americans, they don't assume that like the US is, you know, creating a devastating new surveillance and intelligence program that will be used to further total nuclear war. Instead, they go, it's aliens.
Yeah, because we're great at Occam's razor.
Yeah, yeah, it's a time. But I think what's really important here is that what Brazel had actually made first contact with was America's new thermonuclear monarchy. And this is something that I think more people should talk about, which is that having nukes just as a thing massively centralizes power into sort of individual people and into the executive branch, because, you know, so if you have nuclear weapons, right, the theory is that you have to have one person who presses the button to shoot them, and you can't have, like, you know, there's not enough time for, like, a parliament or deliberative body to, like, set the nukes off. And so this becomes this rationale for enormously centralizing the power of the executive branch, and this produces an absolutely terrifying new age of state secrecy filled with increasingly powerful and clandestine government agencies and bureaucracies, ranging from the CIA, our good friends, to the much lesser known Atomic Energy Commission. And these agencies, the power of their secrecy is so strong that, I mean, by the 1990s, the Atomic Energy Commission's like successor agency decides that they can keep secrets from the president on the basis that the president does not need to know, which is absolutely horrifying.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, it's just, you got a democracy, and that's going to be a problem, because in a democracy, people presumably get to make choices. And if you don't want them to decide not to continue making weird shit to throw into the sky, then, you know, why, you probably should just not tell anybody anything.
Yeah, well, and that particular story is also grim. This is one of the things I was debating covering. They're covering up the fact that they deliberately poisoned enormous, like, hundreds and hundreds of people with radiation to do human testing on them.
Yeah.
And yeah, then they're
like,
sure,
the president
happen.
Doesn't need to know this. Like, doesn't need to know about our...
You know, yeah, I mean, it's like, we don't tell Sophie, guys, a lot of the things that we do with our budget. Like when we irradiated all those people for a podcast, we're still not telling Sophie that.
Yeah, it could happen here. Black budget will remain secret.
Yeah. It is a lot of money. Please continue.
Now all of the secrecy around this and the fact that these cover-ups are like the most half-assed shit anyone has ever seen, you know, it fuels this rampant speculation around UFOs. And the conspiracy theorists are also aided by the fact that people keep seeing weird flying objects.
We sure do. We love to see weird shit in the sky. We are very good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're incredible at seeing weird shit. And the sky is full of weird shit.
It's true.
I saw a crow the other day. Damn. Anyway.
Yeah. In 1955, hundreds of people start seeing these just enormous flaming crosses flying impossibly high and impossibly fast in the sky. And publicly,
the KKK has gained space flight.
It's worse than that. the people doing this are worse than the KKK, which is
wow.
Fun.
What a sentence. Chris.
It's great. So you know, in public, the U.S. government's like, whatever, these aren't a thing, they're fake, whatever, they're meteorological disturbances. Mm-hmm. In private, the passengers who are on these jets that see these flaming crosses are all detained by the FBI and sworn to secrecy after providing accounts of what they'd seen.
Awesome.
And yeah, you know, and this is also a part of the sort of UFO mythology. And this does actually happen. Like the FBI does actually show up to these people.
Well, that's who you send in when you want people to stop wondering if something shady is going on.
Yeah, it's
when
great.
I hear the FBI is telling people to shut up about something, I think, well, that's not worth looking into at all.
When you have five men in suits and sunglasses show up at your door and tell you to talk about something, you know that means everything's fine and normal.
Yeah, that's great.
You know what I don't think of when I think of the FBI? UFO cover-ups.
It's great. Yeah, and this is America's first contact with yet another new part of its clandestine military bureaucracy, Area 51.
Ah.
Now, Area 51 is a secret military aeronautics research and development facility built on a salt flat called Lake Groom inside the massive Nevada Test and Training Range. This place, by the way, this place is massive. This place is like the size of Connecticut. Like, it's like larger than Connecticut.
It's larger than most of the eastern states.
Yeah. It's enormous. But, you know, it's something I think is very interesting about this is that for all its mystique, Area 51 is not the most dangerous facility on the Nevada Test and Training Range.
No, that's Area 52, the sub-level below where they store the real weird shit. Yeah. I'm
okay,
aware.
So the funny part is...
I watched a few YouTube videos. I think I know what I'm talking about.
Well, we are actually going to get to Area 52.
Okay,
by the end of this.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
but the thing that's actually really dangerous is Areas 12, 19, and 20. Because that's the Nevada
test
site.
How many areas do these motherfuckers need?
There's like 100.
God damn it. They
like sectioned off all these things. Yeah, all the others. Because, I mean, this is like a state-sized, like, testing facility, right?
They get all these fucking areas, but the Branch Davidians have one compound where they don't even do very many illegal things, and suddenly it's a problem.
Well, but here's the thing. The Branch Davidians never had nukes.
Could you imagine though?
That would have been pretty amazing. You know what? If they'd had nukes, about like 80 people would still be alive.
Maybe they might have accidentally nuked themselves,
or everyone would be dead. One of the
yeah,
two.
Yeah, that's those are the two. Yeah.
80 people would be alive, or everyone on Earth would be dead.
So Area 51 is the partner of the Nevada test site, which is areas 12, 19, and 20. And that's where the real dangerous shit happens, which is the U.S. test nuclear weapons there.
Okay.
But I need to make it clear at the outset, we should not be underestimating Area 51. That place has done irreparable harm to the cause of world peace and very nearly like caused us all to go extinct several times. So do not underestimate the power of military spy airplanes.
Yeah,
they,
no,
they
those
too
are,
can lead us all to destruction.
Those oh, are no. on, honestly I way mean, more spooky than any little gray creatures
yeah.
with large
oh,
heads
yeah.
you can think of.
Various planes just with cameras on them have gotten us closer to the extermination of all life on Earth than basically anything else.
Yep.
Except for that one computer bug that that the Russians had that would have killed us all if not for Petrov, I think his name was. I forget his last name. Yeah. That one guy who was like, yeah. "No, we're not going to have a nuclear war right yeah. now."
Oh, there's a lot. This is weirdly the Soviets come out looking like.
Oh yeah,
not
no, they
bad
definitely...
in this episode. Yeah, it's like every time there's almost a nuclear war, it's like it doesn't happen because the Soviets are like no, and the Americans are like we want this war, and the Soviets
no, yeah,
are like
we,
yeah.
no,
we
as
don't
a
actually
rule,
want to
when
kill
it comes to atomic apocalypse stories. If you tally up all the columns, because the Soviets definitely have a few in their side, but
oh,
it
yeah.
winds up way more fucked up nuke incidents on the U.S. side
oh,
of
yeah.
things than the Soviet side of things. Although there was that time they built a bomb so big that it might have changed the tilt of the Earth if they detonated
yeah.
it. And at the last moment, they were like, let's take half of the fissile material out of this. This
yeah.
seems like a bad idea.
Oh, man, it's great.
Yeah.
So speaking of bad ideas involving involving nuclear weapons, so Area 51...
Products and services? Oh no! I thought you were doing
services.
An ad break.
We
it is time for an ad.
That's
so
true.
Yeah, speaking of
bad ideas,
you know what else will change the tilt of the Earth? The products and services, their quality is so intent that it's like the Tsar Bomba.
It is just like that.
Explosive
yeah.
potential.
Okay. Here's some ads. Yeah.
Area 51 was founded in 1951 by the Atomic Energy Commission, a federal agency established as a successor to the mother of all black projects, the Manhattan Project.
Ah.
Now,
yeah.
black projects yeah. are secret off-the-books military defense projects, the existence of which are kept secret even from Congress, which is a totally cool and normal thing to have in a democracy when your representative body does not know what anyone else, what the military is doing.
Yeah.
Now, Area 51 is interesting because it's basically like a black project of a black project. It's so secret that like the vice president, LBJ, who is like not a fuck off vice president, right? This is LBJ.
No,
LBJ yeah.
wields some power. He's
yeah,
he's like a Cheney type.
Yeah, yeah, and Cheney's also going to show up in the story briefly.
Yeah,
but yeah, even he didn't actually really know what was going on there until like after JFK was assassinated. So this place is really secret. And as best we can tell, in its first 4 years, it was essentially the Atomic Energy Commission basically wanted a place to do off-the-books like pilot and aircraft testing. And they were able to do this successfully that like we basically don't know what they did for 4 years. But
that's good.
Yeah, but in 1955, the facility is taken over by an even spookier organization, the Central Intelligence Agency.
Ah, our old friends.
Woo!
Yeah.
Now the CIA, this is 1955, and the CIA has spent the early years of the Cold War getting just its absolute ass handed to it in Europe because, you know, this is what happens when a bunch of dipshit Harvard grads in like.
Hey,
yeah, because they keep poisoning people with acid and that's all they're doing.
Yeah,
they're
but but the problem is, so they're running into a real intelligence agency, which is the KGB, who like those guys do not fuck around.
They
like,
don't just poison people with acid. They
yeah,
do. They're much more intense than the early 50s, the CIA. Yeah.
Yeah, and so they have this real problem, which is that. The CIA basically can't get intelligence out of Eastern Europe, which is bad
yeah.
when your entire like state is based off of like fighting Eastern Europe. So the
yeah,
solution,
that's kind of your main target.
Yeah, yeah. So the solution is to fly a plane really high over Russia and use it to take pictures.
Uh huh.
Now, yeah, seems good.
Yeah, like I think like this sounds like I think kind of banal to us in the 21st century. Where like,
I mean, yeah,
because
this is like pre-satellite.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, like we're all just sort of used to the fact that like the government is spying on us at all times.
We sure are.
But you know, in 1955, this is incredibly radical. Like the U.S. has only had intelligence agencies for like 10 years. And there is no precedent at all. There's none. No precedent for flying surveillance over a country you aren't actively at war with. Like the only reason you fly an airplane over a country is if you're about to bomb them.
People should note also that like the first 10 years or so that we had an intelligence industry, every single or that we had an intelligence agencies, every single vote for funding them, every single like vote for giving them new powers was like universally supported by both parties. There was zero dissent about whether or not we should have a CIA and they should have a giant black budget to do all sorts of scary shit that might provoke a nuclear war.
Yeah,
it's like really, people were just like, well, of course.
It's really bad. And I think this is, you know, this is what Area 51 actually is. The Area 51 is the place where the development of the permanent intelligence industrial complex is permanently solidified. And this all starts with the U-2. Now, the CIA brings in Lockheed Martin and a little-known but very powerful and influential defense contractor called EG&G, who, I mean, they do a lot of stuff.
God,
but
that's such a defense contractor.
Yeah,
name.
It's the ultimate defense contractor name, and nobody knows who they are because they make, like, cameras and, like, film equipment and stuff. But, like, you know, ooh. So these are the people who, like, made the cameras that could take pictures of nuclear explosions.
Yeah.
And you know, and so the CIA brings them all to this like remote testing range in Nevada to work on a secret project called Dragon Lady. Now, in its early stages, Area 51 is so secret that like even the Air Force doesn't know about it. And this like really pisses off the Air Force's senior generals, in particular a guy who is going to become very important to the story, Air Force General Curtis LeMay, who like that man. Like that, I don't say this very often about historical figures, but like, so if someone had assassinated General Curtis LeMay, the world like we would the amount safer that the world would have been.
LeMay was one of the architects of saturation bombing, starting in World War II and continuing up to now. We didn't stop.
And that is not the worst thing he's involved in.
Yeah.
Now, but and LeMay is extremely pissed off that the CIA doesn't tell him about this, and he's going to remember that. That's going to become important later in the story. But eventually, the CIA is forced to bring the Air Force into Area 51 for a number of reasons, partially because they're flying airplanes, and partially because the U-2 is like kind of a piece of shit, you know. And part of it is okay, so they're learning how to fly planes really high for the first time, but. You know, the U-2, if you fly it too slowly, it stalls, which is like, okay, that's kind of a normal airplane.
Yeah, the U-2 is an amazing aircraft because it just is one of the most absurd pieces of aviation equipment ever designed. And, like, watching those things take off and land is the most funny thing I've ever
seen. It's wild. Like, the other problem is this thing. Okay, so, like, yeah, so it has a stalling problem, but it also has a problem. If you fly it too fast, the wings will fall off.
Okay.
It's so fragile.
You build a plane, Chris.
It's so massive and so fragile. Yeah. The wings are so heavy and so large. It's one of the most ridiculous pieces of equipment ever designed.
It's incredible. So, yeah, so the CIA needs help to get this thing working. And so the result is that Area 51 at this point is staffed by about, it's one-third CIA, one-third Air Force, and one-third Lockheed Martin.
What a combination.
Yeah,
God, can you imagine that cafeteria, the conversations?
It's wild, too, because it's like, okay, so you have a bunch of just, like, spooks, right? You have a bunch of just, like, CIA people. And then there's just, like, a bunch of test pilots who are, like, just nuts and have been,
absolutely.
A bunch of, like people who are, like, genuine war heroes who, like, fought in World War II, but then went, turned around and, like, did horrible war crimes in, like, Korea.
Yeah, it's
a mix that's
of,
how
like,
it works.
20%, 20% like Tom Cruise from Top Gun, but with horrible PTSD, and 80% Michael Douglas from Falling Down.
Oh,
but
also,
he hasn't picked up a gun yet.
we can mention this now. So the reason that Top Gun exists is actually also Area 51.
Yeah.
Because at one point, the U.S., like, so the Israelis managed to convince a MiG-23 pilot to defect, and then they gave the airplane to the U.S., and so the U.S. spent a bunch of time, like, flying this MiG-23 around, and figuring out how it worked, and that's how they like trained all they basically trained all their pilots, because they suddenly knew how the MiGs worked, and that's the origin of the Top Gun program. But then also hilariously, the MiGs got their revenge when an Air Force general whose name is I am not making this up, his name is General Bond. Okay. And he was like, he's like, shows up to Air 51, is like, I want to fly a MiG-18. And they're
okay, buddy.
And then he just flew into a mountain and died, which I think is great.
Okay, well, all right, never mind.
That's extremely funny.
We have turned my opinion
around. Was he killing himself, or was he just
No, he was just flying it, yeah.
That's incredibly
He was flying a
MiG-18, wow.
which is like a really, that really is, fast, difficult to control plane. Just flew
that
down.
That rules so hard.
That's great.
That's very funny.
You just completely changed my opinion of this man.
Yeah,
wow.
It was amazing.
That is incredibly based. I'm so happy.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of other way more depressing plane crashes that happens here. And
all right.
Part of the reason it's bad is because this whole thing is a black project.
I have trouble
imagine
being depressed about anyone there dying.
Oh, I don't really care so much about the people, but like, so for example, a bunch of like 14 of the people who are flying U2s like die, and they crash into a mountain.
Oh, well,
in one of the planes
crashed
about, and it's like whatever. I mean, yeah, but the thing that sucks about it is that like the U.S. government lies to their families for like half a century about how they died. And
absolutely,
it's like, this sucks. But then it gets even worse, because again, like this is the black project of like all black projects, and that means that they have a bunch of people from Operation Paperclip, because again, this is a facility run by the CIA in the 1950s.
God,
and so they let a bunch of literal Nazi doctors run endurance tests on potential U-2 pilots. Now, these doctors are Nazi concentration camp doctors who had performed horrific human experiments on people in the camps. So naturally, when they do endurance tests, they torture people. So they would do things like, they would force pilots to like hold their arms under ice water for like extremely long times. They would strap to the chairs, just like randomly electrocute different parts of their body, and it was like, yeah, I mean, it's a nightmare. Like, it's you know, this is what happens when you give the Nazis free reign over a completely secret testing facility where no one can even talk about what people did to them. It's great. This is why you don't have black projects, because the Nazis wind up in charge of them and they torture people.
Yeah, I think we're pretty all on the same page of not having really any projects.
It's bad. Now, the CIA has another problem, which is a much weirder and funnier problem, which is that people keep seeing their spy planes.
They sure, yeah.
And you know, and so part of this is the original U2s were silver, which means that they reflected the sun and thus looked like a giant flaming cross. Yeah, the very first U2s are like bright silver.
Yeah, because like, yeah, now they're all matte black. But like a chromed out U2.
It looks like a flying cross. Yeah, and it's, but you know, like this is, you know, this causes like a huge number of the UFO sightings, just people seeing this thing, and eventually they're like, wait, we have to make this black, because like having a spy plane that glows in the sun,
yes,
is a bad idea. No, and worse yet, so you know, the U2 can fly at like 65,000 feet, which is it's way outside the range of anti-aircraft guns.
It is ridiculously high that plane can go,
but the CIA, in their eternal hubris, assumes that it's also too high for the Soviet's radar to work. And so what happens instead is that they fly a U-2 directly over the Kremlin to like take pictures of where Khrushchev is sleeping, and the Soviets just immediately see it. And get really pissed off, because, again, like there's no precedent for flying a spy plane over a country you're not at war with. And they're like, what the fuck? Why are you flying planes? The problem is they can't actually like shoot them down, because the plane's too high up. So they're just simmering and getting mad.
They can just see it, yeah.
Yeah, and but the U.S. is like, okay, this is not provocative enough, right? Like we've now flown planes over the house of like a guy who can fire nuclear weapons. That's enough.
No, that's incredibly funny.
No,
actually,
it is very funny. But they're like, So Curtis LeMay, who's
me of some things. Anyway, we don't need to talk about alleged actions in front of Russian embassies. Continue.
Yes. So LeMay is this guy. This guy is a threat to all humanity, and he has this idea. Like, okay, he wants to figure out how the USSR's radar system works. And so his plan is he's going to get the USSR to trigger their radar system, and he's going to do this by flying 1,000 B-47 bombers over Alaska and fly them like right at Soviet airspace and then turn around the moment before they get in.
Guys, come on. There's other ways to
No, that's based.
There's other ways to do trolling. Like, you don't need
to,
like...
Not.
You don't need to risk the entire population with your trolls.
This is why you're not an A-level troll. The A-level trolls know that if you're not risking the entire future of possibly all life in the known universe, then you're not even really
trolling. Other ways
That's
to
just
troll.
Cuck shit, Garrison.
Make some friends.
Cuck shit.
Make some friends and troll your friends. It's not that hard. Come on, guys.
Troll the world by playing chicken with its continued ability to support life above the microbial level.
Like, the thing that's incredible about this, too, is the only reason any of this works is that the Soviets, the Soviets are not good, but the Soviets aren't who the Americans say they are.
No, they're sure not.
Like, if the U.S. had done this against the U.S., everyone on Earth would have died.
Oh, we would be so dead.
Yeah, like
we would have nuked
in 1955.
Out of all life.
Yeah, would have been the end of it. And LeMay, you can say of who LeMay is. LeMay, someone asked him about this afterwards, and he says, and I quote, "With a little bit more luck, we could have started World War III."
Oh man, okay.
This guy's a fucking monster. Yeah,
they are all just.
Yeah, this is so bad that the CIA sends a panel of advisors to the president telling him that you can't do this again because the Soviets will think it's an actual attack.
When the CIA is calling you out, then I think it's time to wrap up shop.
Yeah,
I think we're done.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, this is not the only just absolutely psychotic thing going on in this period, around Area 51. So in 1956, 1957, the U.S. tests the first dirty bomb, and they really don't know what this thing is going to do. And it's this is extremely dangerous. They're detonating a bomb. It's placed plutonium everywhere. But just wait. Lest you think that detonating a dirty bomb was not dangerous enough, in 1957, they dropped something called the Hood Bomb. And this bomb, they dropped this bomb in Nevada, right? The blast of this bomb blows out windows in L.A., People see,
wow.
Again, this is in
Great.
Nevada.
Excellent.
People see the explosion in Canada.
Great.
They see it in Mexico. You can see it from 800 miles out to sea. And the funniest part is that it temporarily renders Area 51 uninhabitable, and they forgot to tell the people at Area 51 to evacuate.
That is incredibly
just
funny.
Just giving everybody cancer.
That actually is incredibly funny.
Yeah, and then, but the Area 51 people still want to work there, and so but the thing is, this is before they have hazmat suits. So they send a bunch of people out in lab coats with magnets to go collect radioactive bomb fragments so people can go back to testing spy planes in Area 51.
Great.
That's extremely fun. Just killing all of their spook employees.
I have no problems with this.
Yeah, this is fine. This is completely fine.
We have probably saved a lot of lives, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, the problem is, though, that they Area 51 was allowed to resume, and that very nearly killed us all.
But the more people that die at Area 51 and get cancer, the odds are that contributes
slowly.
It is slow death, I guess.
That's what everyone says about radiation poisoning.
It happens too slowly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, okay, so Area 51's U-2s are continuing to do flights and pissing off the Soviets. But unbeknownst to the Americans, the Soviet anti-air capacity was rapidly improving. And on May Day 1960, the U.S. pushes it too far, and they send a pilot named Gary Powers to fly over the Soviet Union, and the Soviets just shoot the shit out of him. And there's actually this really cute moment where he crashes and he survived, and he's found by some random Soviet farmer, and the Soviet farmer just is oh hey cool, just gives him a cigarette with Lakia the space dog on it, and they have this very nice moment where they smoke a cigarette together, and then Powers gets arrested by the Soviet government and put on trial for espionage. Now. Yeah. The interesting part about this is that, so the U.S. assumes that Powers is dead, because when they designed the U-2, the CIA was like, oh yeah, if this, they didn't tell the pilots this, but the CIA,
crashes,
yeah, everyone will die.
You are done.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, oh, but Powers lives through it. And so the U.S. is claiming on live television that Powers was this wasn't a spy plane, he was collecting high altitude weather data for the National Advisory Committee for Aeronautics.
Sure, he
was. Of course, sure.
This lets Khrushchev has his finest hour here. It's incredible theatrical moment. He gives this incredible speech that's he's asking comrades what would happen if Soviet planes flew over Detroit? An immediate war, and he goes on this thing about how he's accusing okay, so who sent the spy plane? And he's like, well, it couldn't be the American people. It must have been the American militarists running the spy plane program without the knowledge of the commander in chief. And so the U.S. keeps denying it. And then Khrushchev, a couple days later, gets this another incredible line. I'm going to quote from the speech because it rules. "Comrades," he said, "I must let you in on a secret. When I made my report 2 days ago, I deliberately refrained from mentioning that we have the remains of the plane, and we also have the pilot, who was quite alive and kicking." And the U.S. just, like, gets owned because they've been...
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
I'm sure the state isn't thrilled.
It's an enormous embarrassment for this. And there's a couple of other great lines. So Gary Powers gets tried for espionage, and there's this incredible line in this trial where Sergei Rudenko, who's this he's an Air Force general, and he's also part of the trial, and he calls Area 51, quote, "a criminal conspiracy between," quote, "a major American capitalist company, an espionage and reconnaissance center, and the military of the U.S." And this
is
true.
You're right. You're right.
That is true.
This is literally what Area 51 is. But this is where everything goes to shit, because there was supposed to be a massive, like, U.S.-USSR peace summit to, like, look at denuclearization. And Khrushchev is like, okay, Eisenhower, you need to apologize for flying spy planes over our country. And Eisenhower is like, no. And the conference is canceled, and the world is plunged into mortal peril that will only barely survive.
We did it. It's fine.
Oh, yeah. We got extremely lucky. All of this basically causes Khrushchev to, like, start a military buildup in Cuba. And, you can see where this is going. But don't worry. Lest you think that Area 51 is only indirectly responsible for this, they are, in fact, directly responsible for the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Oh, great. Good.
Area 51 does, they do a bunch of other stuff to, like, fuck with the Cubans. Like, they have this thing where they send in pilots, like, right up to Cuban airspace, and, like, have them basically trade missile locks with Soviet pilots so that they can test the Soviets, like, electronic weapons capacity. And it's like, again,
cool.
Once again, we only didn't die because the Soviets didn't shoot after the U.S. did some, like, just absolutely bonkers.
Some shit we,
like,
would have absolutely shot them for
we
doing.
We would have nuked
if
Moscow.
If they'd done it to us.
If a MiG had buzzed, like, Washington, D.C., we would have ended all humanity.
Yeah, we sure would have. Now, and they fucking knew that. God, that has to be so frustrating.
Yeah.
Like, not a lot of sympathy for the USSR in my book, but just being like, well, this is unacceptable, but if we do literally just what they're doing to us, they will end all life on Earth.
Yeah,
so I guess we have to be chill here.
Yeah, it's like... Yeah, well, and speaking of doing things, there's also an incredible Bay of Pigs connection, which is that Richard Bissell, who's the guy who did Bay of Pigs, was the guy who ran Area 51. And
what?
One of the reasons why it fails is that, so remember when I talked about how the CIA pissed off Curtis LeMay by not telling him about Area 51? So LeMay is supposed to send a bunch of B-52 bombers to support the Bay of Pigs, and he doesn't do it. And his defense is that he fucked up the time zones, which, like...
we've all missed meetings because of that. I'm late all the time because of time zones. It's that you know what? Curtis LeMay did nothing wrong.
Yeah, it's amazing. And this causes Blissell, it doesn't work because it's a clusterfuck. And this causes Blissell to get kicked out of the security establishment. But it doesn't stop the U.S. fucking with Cuba.
Of course not.
So more areas.
We still haven't stopped fucking.
Oh yeah,
with Cuba.
No, we're like never going to. It's incredible. Yeah. But okay, so this is the time that came closest to killing us all, which is that.
Well, Chris, you know what will also eventually kill us all?
Products and services.
That's not even a joke. That's just true.
Yeah, all of these things that is being sold for fake money. So buy products.
And this is when Garrison goes on a rant about fiat currency. Oh, we're back, and we're talking about the Honda Fiat, which is certainly a car.
I lost it all to Fiat. Please, everyone, everyone, send me what you can. I'll reinvest and give you back your money in a few days.
Gonna buy one of those 8-bit illustration NFTs that costs $2 million, aren't you, Garrison?
Oh, you bet.
See, no, wait, Robert, you can't.
I heard now that they're making physical copies. This is a brand new phenomenon. They're making physical versions of an NFT, so you can actually, like, have something. Yeah, exciting. It's amazing.
I'm sure it costs an extra fee.
There's nothing else like this. It's like art, but you actually can have it. It's the first time. It's really
breaking.
Garrison, amazing. Robert, you guys, you can't tell the public how we funnel all of our money around for our black projects. You're not allowed to explain our money laundering schemes on air.
You know, one surprising thing about all of this, like Area 51 stuff, is honestly the degree to which the government does not deflect stuff by using alien shit more often.
Because, well,
like, if they were smart, they could just use alien shit more often to deflect any suspicion about what's actually happening.
So they I don't know. They go back and so part of what's going. So they go back and forth on this, and part of what's going on is that the CIA. When people start first reporting UFOs, like, they have two, like, concerns, one of which is that it's just going to cause panic in the U.S. public, and they don't want... They're doing the sort of, like, elite panic thing, and they're afraid that everyone's going to go insane or whatever.
Sure.
But the second thing that they're worried about is that they're really concerned that the Soviet Union is going to block out the U.S.'s early warning system by sending a bunch of fake UFO reports.
Which would be very funny.
Yeah, which would be very funny, but... You know, but so their initial line on UFOs is like they spend a lot of time trying to get everyone to like not believe in them because they're like this is threatening hysteria and it's like damaging our early warning capacity because people keep reporting and also because people just keep seeing their spy planes and so they're just like, guys, there's no UFOs. We'll get to in a little bit of some more about that because there's a lot of very weird stuff going on there. But first, we have to almost end the world.
All right, let's just do that first, and then we'll get to that.
In 1962, the CIA flies a U-2 over Cuba, and they get a bunch of pictures of nuclear weapons. And this is basically the thing that starts the Cuban Missile Crisis. Although I also we need to talk about LeMay one more time because before they get these pictures, LeMay is convinced there's no nukes there, and LeMay wants to do a preemptive strike on Cuba to stop the Soviets from bringing missiles in, which, again, literally would have killed us all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but LeMay gets voted down, so the CIA, you know, sends the U-2s in, and this is the thing that starts the Cuban Missile Crisis. You have the Soviets and Americans, like, staring each other down at sea. But again, because these people are just, like because the Area 51 people and the CIA people are just nuts, they keep sending UFOs. They keep sending U-2s over Cuba, and they're sending U-2s over Cuba, and the Americans' like line on the U-2s they send over is if they shoot down a U-2, we're going to invade.
Cool.
And so the Soviets actually do shoot down a U-2, but for like the only time ever in history, the U.S. is like, wait, maybe we shouldn't literally end all humanity. And
yeah, that's good.
Like we get this moment where just like. You know, you get to actually, so you have all the like just horrific leadership stuff that has got you here, but you get a moment where like the soul of humanity is tested in like a very small number of people. And it's like, if any one of these people on either side flinches or like decides that they want to end all life on Earth, everyone is going to die. And for one of like, this is like one of the only times ever that it has actually mattered that we're not all just like terrible pieces of shit and we didn't do it and we didn't end all humanity. And eventually, the whole thing is wound down. And
alternatively, the people in charge realized that if they were doing this, they could no longer do whatever fun stuff they did in their spare time, and it's only for selfish reasons.
Oh yeah, I mean, because of course, the leaders get no credit here at all. The people who do get credit are just like the random assholes on a ship who like got sent over to the other side of the world. And had to just like sit there knowing that they could be destroyed at any moment and then didn't panic and like held.
Yeah.
And kept everyone on Earth from dying by just holding it together in a situation that would have just like destroyed most people. So good on like the crews of the ships for not killing us all.
Yeah. That's always nice.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
depending on how I feel any given day.
Now, part of what's happening here is the U-2 is getting shot down. Makes Area 51 people go, we need to build a faster plane.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
And so their solution to this is the A-12 Oxcart. And the A-12 Oxcart is interesting because this is another thing that everyone thinks is a UFO but actually isn't. And I mean, there's a very famous UFO picture of like one of NASA's like X-15 rocket jets. And in the very like in the very corner of this rocket picture of the rocket jet, there's an A-12. And everyone is like, oh, this is a UFO. This is a UFO. And it's like, no, it's not. It's this. But, you know, the CIA keeps doing these like half-ass cover-ups. But like, again, like you can just see these out of passenger planes. Like if you're in a plane, you'll just see it. It's like, oh, this thing looks like a cigar just flew past. And they keep trying to do these cover-ups.
They do look incredibly weird.
Yeah, and it just doesn't work. And eventually, in the mid-60s, Walter Cronkite, like, goes on TV and tells the American public that the CIA had been doing a UFO cover-up.
Cool.
Which is true. Cool.
Yeah.
But everyone assumes this is about aliens. But it's not about aliens. It's nothing to do with aliens. It has everything to do with the fact that people keep seeing this biplanes.
Yeah.
And so the Air Force gets put in charge of an investigation of UFOs. But the problem is that only a few top Air Force generals know about the A-12.
Yeah, only a few people know about the existence of this aircraft.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And so the low-level investigators are like, oh, the Air Force is doing a UFO cover-up, which they are, but they assume that it's about aliens. And so a bunch of these people like turn into alien, like UFO conspiracy theorists. And yeah, because this is, you know, and we're getting to see this. The U.S. basically, through its sort of like the secrecy around these programs, it keeps creating UFO conspiracies. And there's some question as to how deliberately they're doing this. So the head of the National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomena, which is like the U.S.'s UFO study group, in 1969 is taken over by Joseph Bryan III, who was the CIA's first chief of political and psychological warfare.
He seems like a solid dude to hang out with.
Yeah. So I have no idea what that means.
No one does. There's no way to know.
You know, and there's some reports that there have been a couple of like books and documentaries in the last like 10 years that have reported
that
people in the CIA deliberately fed like fake UFO information to people to cause people to like go even deeper into their conspiracy theory
which
stuff.
I absolutely believe.
I will say this. Okay, so like this is the kind of thing the CIA would do, but the people who are giving the evidence are sketchy, and
I mean, of course, yeah, like that is kind of how that. I mean, they probably feed it to a lot of people, and the people who talk about it.
Well, I mean, so the people who are testifying about it are the people who allegedly did it.
Yeah,
which is interesting. Okay. But the thing that the problem that is weird about is those people also just sort of they're like, oh, I spread this conspiracy, but like they also want to get into the UFO scene. And so it's weird. And
it is
and,
a lot of think, weird conflicting interests going on. Yeah,
yeah. And this is one of the problems with the CIA, which is that like, okay, so there's like some important things you need to understand about the CIA. It's like they're bad. You don't need conspiracy theories for that. They're bad. They do a lot of bad things. The CIA having done something is not in and of itself proof that they did another thing. So for example, like you can say you say something like the CIA is a moon base. Right. And someone asks you for evidence, you can go, oh, well, they did Operation Paperclip and they're involved in the development of rocket technology. But just because the CIA did Operation Paperclip and had rockets does not mean they have a moon base. Right. Like this is something that happens all the time when people talk about the CIA.
That's a basic fallacy. You cannot
use something that the CIA has done as direct evidence they did something else unless there's a direct tie between unless you have evidence that the other thing happened.
There's other people who suck.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing is, they're not omnipotent. And this is one of the example I always bring up because it's really funny. So the CIA just completely missed two different Indian nuclear weapons tests, like across 2 decades. Like, not only did they not realize that there were tests going to be happening soon, like they didn't even know that India was doing tests at all. And then so these nukes would go off and they would learn that India was doing tests when the Indian government announced it on TV. So like they're not actually omnipotent.
I think what is it also sort of interesting people. Is I'm not sure if you're you're gonna bring this up shortly, but like this sort of thing is definitely still happening in terms of like Air Force pilots seeing weird stuff in the sky and then going to talk about it, be like, just like this is some other aircraft. Usually, yeah. Well, it's usually we're able to actually like prove what these things are. But like, you know, military or Air Force people see stuff, they talk about it in the news, and the timing is always weird. It's always been like some other like civil unrest is happening when like we get some weird piece of information about UFOs. You're like, oh, really? What a coincidence.
Well, and it's an interesting thing too, because like there's this kind of like weird interplay, because like a lot of like senators and presidents like actually believe that there's UFOs. And this is like this
I mean,
is a weird
I
thing
because like, UFOs
there's
yes, but like there's different. Yeah, like, well, do you mean like UFOs or do you mean like aliens?
Well, like aliens, like this, like the, okay. there are a lot of people in the government who do believe in aliens, and it's this weird tension because and a lot of, like everything is like I don't know, like Harry Reid, for example, was a big alien dude, right? But Harry Reid, like, I mean, I know he's very powerful in Nevada, so like maybe he knew, but like Harry Reid is not someone who knows what's happening in these black projects,
no.
Because they don't tell Congress, right? I mean, he might know because of how powerful he is, but like again, it's up in the like even the people who are supposed to be in charge don't know like, what's actually happening, and that means they fall for conspiracy theories because
yeah, they fall for conspiracy theories, and at this point, it's more of a fandom than anything else.
Yeah,
it's really
yeah.
easy to get sucked into a fandom like
yeah.
that. So I can't. I mean, I don't trust yeah. any congressman on any level, specifically around this issue, because this is solely a fandom issue. It's like taking their opinion on like. Religion. It's like I care zero amount because it's only a fandom. At,
yeah,
at that point.
But and I think that the thing that is very dangerous about this though is that again, Area 51 is like the existence of Area 51 is like an atrocity to anyone who thinks you live in a democracy. They have almost killed us like multiple times, and
sure
everyone
have.
Is like, oh, it's the aliens. It's like no, they literally almost ended life on Earth like four times. And okay, yeah, you know, but we're gonna get into they yeah, we'll get into the other horrible stuff they do in a second. But I do want to talk about the one cool thing they did.
Oh,
because okay, they did one thing that was incredibly awesome. That was the greatest thing the American Empire has ever produced, which is they made the SR-71. And the SR-71 is fucking sick. This is the coolest airplane anyone has. Like, just like go Google a picture of it. It looks so cool. It can hit Mach 3.4. Like it's just fast. It's faster than bullets. It doesn't have any weapons on it, and its defense strategy. If someone shoots a missile at it, is to outrun the missile.
Yeah, it is the strategy.
It's
yeah.
what the
so
X-Men's
sick.
Plane is. The X-Men's
yeah, yeah.
plane
it's
is based
so,
off.
It's the coolest
it's
thing
dope.
Ever.
It's a it, fucking
it,
rad.
It,
plane.
It does look just like the X-Wing. Does look just like the X-Men's jet.
Yeah.
X-Men.
Well, yeah.
Yeah
it's specifically
there. Yeah.
A modified SR-71. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
dope
it's
as
the
shit.
Sickest thing ever. And it's like and,
yeah.
and from that was like that was the pinnacle of the American Empire was when they made this one just absolutely
yeah.
incredible machine. And then they used it to do war crimes in Vietnam. And then
great.
They were like, oh, it's too expensive. And Dick Cheney, who is a demon in human form, who will one day return to the hell that spawned him and spend the rest of his days being torn apart by Satan, has the program killed because he wants to make B-2 bombers. And he's like, oh, we got to be able to drop nukes from weird triangle planes. We can't run the coolest plane of all time ever anymore. Ooh. So
yeah.
he kills it, and it's depressing, and it's everything is bad now, and he will rot in hell eternally for
yeah.
of his many crimes, killing the SR-71, the only good thing the Americans ever did.
He should have. This is the only thing we should have ever spent money on as a country.
Yeah, but if
no
like,
roads, just a network of SR-71s
yeah,
taking people.
It was almost $300 million in today's money. For one,
yeah, sure, but like the F-35 is like
yeah,
a trillion.
It's a lot.
Is like a trillion dollars. Look at how much worse that plane looks than the SR-71. Like
yeah,
every successive
flying
plane.
Around in an F-35,
no, they're so wet. They're so bad.
Because Professor really Xavier sad. has fucking style.
Unfortunately, so there's the other things they're building there are horrifying. One of the most important ones. That I think people have sort of like forgotten the real impact of is that the F-117 Nighthawk, and so Area 51 is basically where America's stealth technology is developed.
Yeah,
which really does sound like conspiracy, but like no, this is actually like yeah, this is what they're
yeah,
doing.
Yeah, where else
they're,
are you
going to
do it?
Yeah, they're doing stealth technology, and the Nighthawk is really bad, and the Nighthawk is really bad because it fundamentally changes the balance of power between anti-air weapons and bombers, and this means that the U.S. can just like. I don't know, for example, just obliterate an army of fleeing Iraqi conscripts without having to, like, worry about someone shooting down their planes.
To be fair, I do think the Nighthawk looks way better than the previous plane we mentioned.
SR-71? Ah, no, the SR-71's way cool. I mean, the Nighthawk's
no.
not a bad-looking plane, but
the Nighthawk
the SR-71's
is a beautiful
so cool.
plane. It is a horrible killing machine. It's
yeah.
all it's designed for, and it looks like it. It looks like death. Like, the plane looks like
that. It's
death.
True. It does. It looks like... Well, that's why I like the SR-71, though, because the SR-71 just looks like... It looks like
SR-71
like a race car
looks
that
like
flies.
Sexy death.
Yeah, whereas...
Yeah.
whereas
this
the, whereas
one looks
Nighthawk
like...
Is like
this
yeah,
one looks like...
We're going
like,
to murder
mi-
you.
Like, yeah, like a government put into a plane that is death. That
yeah.
is what this plane... That is what it looks like.
And so, yeah, and this is part of a transition. The Nighthawks actually is... There's an interesting transition that's happening here, which is that... So the Nighthawk tested SR-7. The Nighthawk is tested at Area 51, but this is the first plane that like can actually drop bombs that Area 51 ever made. Because up until this point, they've been doing reconnaissance aircraft. They've been doing the U-2, the S-71, the A-12, which is like a worse.
Yeah, they're just
SR-71.
Capable of accidentally ending the world. Yeah, by brinksmanship. These also like deliberately ending it by dropping bombs.
Yeah, and this is when the CIA gives control of Area 51 to the Air Force. It's 1971.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, and this is also where Area 52 comes in, because Area 52 is literally just a facility next to Area 51. And so Area 51 is like, I'm sorry, Area 52 is built up basically to like house the Nighthawks.
Now it is interesting that like the older Nighthawks look a lot more like UFOs than the newer Nighthawks. Like,
yeah.
The newer Nighthawks look more like the stupid like Tumblr Batmobile, but in a plane. The older Nighthawks look a lot more sci-fi. And it is interesting looking at the difference to be like, if I saw the older Nighthawk, I'd be like, oh, that's a UFO. If I saw the newer Nighthawk, I'm like, oh, that is like a military plane.
Yeah. Well, and I will say this. So they start doing a lot of things to like reduce the number of UFO sightings they produce. So like they start flying, they start flying at night, because it turns out it's actually really hard to see a black airplane at night. Which, yeah. But you know, the other thing that they're doing in Area 51, and they've been doing this really since the 60s, is Area 51 is where the U.S. basically develops its drones.
Yeah, and that is the modern thing that pilots see and then talk about on CBS or whatever.
And you know, and it's interestingly, I've been sort of aware of this. I didn't fully understand it. The U.S. like had drones in the 60s.
We've had them for a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Like they like one of the things they do with the A-12 is they put like they had this like ramjet drone on top of it, which is like pretty sick. Like a ramjet drone is sick. Like that's just like a cool thing.
I mean, yeah, but if it wasn't used for killing people, then all these things are cool. But yeah, they're only designed to kill people.
Well, yeah, but the fun part about the ramjet thing is they had to stop using it because it kept just like cutting the airplane, like kept cutting the A-12 in half.
Okay, well,
critical support to the ramjet drone. But yeah, and I think that the last thing we should talk about is that, yeah, so Area 51's the latest thing that we know that they did that is horrifying and awful is, so up until 9/11, there had been a line in the U.S. military, and that line was, you do not put weapons on unarmed drones. And after 9/11, the Air Force and the CIA basically get together and they're trying to draw up a plan to kill bin Laden. Uh-huh. And so their plan to do this is to put Hellfire missiles on a drone. And this is the origin of the
what a
Predator
horrible
drone
series
turning into
of
the
events.
Drone. Yeah, God. It's awful.
These are like the few decisions that have impacted the course of humanity for the next century that are being responsible for so many bodies.
And this thing, you can see where this is going in the initial thing, because when they're testing the missiles on this, right, in Area 51, they set up like a mock version of like bin Laden's house. Yeah. And they're setting it up so that they can figure out how many children they're going to kill when they blow this thing up.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's been Area 51's modern.
No, the worst thing to come from places like this is putting guns on robots and drones. This is worst thing that humanity
almost ending the world with nuclear weapons and then now drones.
Now, deciding to put bombs and weapons on little tiny things that fly and little robots that crawl around. This is the worst thing imaginable that we could have just not done.
Yep.
But we're like, nope, let's do it, it sucks.
And the thing that's incredible about it is even the like 70s CIA was like, this is a bad idea.
I know. It's just then, one of the first laws of like, it's one of the first laws of...
Yeah, first law of robotics.
The first law of robotics.
Yep.
Yeah, but we stopped talking about that years ago.
Nope. Yeah. And now we have those fucking robot dogs with the fucking like 5.56 rifles mounted on their little tiny heads.
That's 6.5 Creedmoor.
Oh, it's 6.5. Even worse.
Oh, boy.
Even worse. Baby. Yep. And that's the episode.
Well,
and
yeah, go we buy a 6.5 Creedmoor rifle. It'll go right through a robot.
Yeah.
I'm real excited for the robot wars.
Yep.
And then you'll be able to take the robot's ammo.
It's going to suck so bad.
We're already in the robot wars.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's happened. Well, but you know what'll never happen?
It would have been so much better if it was just aliens. God, what? Nope.
It's not. Yeah. I will say this though. If we ever do storm Area 51, we should just destroy it. Like that place should be razed to the ground and like left as a monument to the people it killed. Because
They,
I mean, that should be most of the states.
Specifically, Area 51.
We fill every inch of it with concrete and we top it with a statue of Fox Mulder.
You know what we do is we do the thing like for the theoretical nuclear waste disposal sites.
Oh yeah,
that is what we do.
It is also still sort of irradiated.
It is still also irradiated. So yeah,
nothing
of value is kept here. Turn away.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I wish it was aliens.
Nope.
We all wish it was aliens. It's all right. Well,
the CIA.
That's the episode. You can follow our CIA exploits at the Happen Here Pod on Twitter and Instagram. God, I hate social media. All right. Yep. That's the episode.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.